Before we get into the weeds of this story, a few definitions. Delta 8 is a product derived from the hemp plant that's synthesized to create concentrated levels of THC. THC is the psychoactive compound that's also found in marijuana, but at naturally high levels. And hemp and marijuana are both subspecies of Cannabis sativa L. Next, meet Neil Fetner. He's the deputy chief of police in Lincoln, Alabama, and a critic of Delta 8 products. He explains the relationship between hemp and marijuana this way.
Smells the same, looks the same. It's got all the characteristics. The only thing is how much THC is in that product. The hemp is the lesser of that type of a plant, and the marijuana is the more potent.
That low THC content is why hemp can now be grown legally under federal law. And while that doesn't make Delta 8 products legal, it doesn't make them illegal. That's why they can be sold in many states, including Alabama, to people over 21 years of age, except in Lincoln. To the best of Fetner's knowledge, the city, about 45 minutes east of Birmingham, appears to be the only municipality in the state to outlaw it.
The local ordinance here was designed to combat issues that we were having with products that are not regulated by the FDA.
It's that lack of regulation, say critics, even some proponents of Delta 8, that leaves the consumer in jeopardy.
And a lot of times they don't know what they're getting, and that's dangerous.
That lack of oversight and quality control allows for products. Staffing shortages are not unique to Birmingham. Chuck Wexler is the executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum, a national think tank for law enforcement agencies. Wexler says many larger police departments, those with at least 250 officers, are dealing with significant deficits of personnel. He says larger departments nationally have seen more resignations and retirements and fewer people wanting to be police officers.
This staffing crisis is pervasive. It actually started. We saw the first signs of this in 2019.
He says PERF's data shows the trend at its worst in 2020, following the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers.
I just think that the narrative around policing in that period was very negative.
And he says such high-profile incidents continue to happen, noting the shooting death of an Illinois woman earlier this month by a police officer.
That sends shockwaves all across the country in terms of hiring. When you have a video like that, it's so disturbing that it takes its toll.
Birmingham Police spokesperson Truman Fitzgerald largely agrees.
Just the attention that law enforcement has gotten, some of it's well-deserved. We've done this to ourselves as officers we've seen throughout the nation have given this field a black eye.
The department has 250 officers below what's been budgeted. The result is putting increased pressures on officers still working. Fitzgerald says Birmingham police are working. Sean, thanks for sharing that. You mentioned at least two things in your writing that you say changed your life, your father's suicide and your writing. Talk about how they changed you and what you've learned through those experiences, especially when they intersect.
Well, the two have almost become synonymous, my father's suicide and my writing, because for this stage of my life, my father's suicide exists within my writing. The writing became a, not just a therapy tool, but I would call it more of a surgical tool, in that when someone dies in any way, but it probably, I would say especially with a suicide, in my experience, there's a lot of infection that comes along with it. And that infection, if it's not dealt with, turns into a pus. And that pus begins to build. And if you don't release that, the infection will eat you alive. And so surgically, you go in when you're writing, and you begin to deal with the outside portion of that infection, and you work your way inward. And after a certain amount of time, you will realize that this infection is powerless over you.
In many circles, we don't often talk about suicide. How does your sharing of your experiences play into your public appearances? And do people come to you to discuss the topic before or after?
The the interesting thing about it is you don't talk about it because of the social taboos, and that's extremely normal in a civilized America. You don't talk about things that you don't want to exist. And when you're sharing it with someone and you have this brain link, mind connection, they know it's real, you know it's real. You re-experience certain emotions, you experience the good and the bad, and you get deeper into what you're really experiencing and what you did experience. And that is probably the most effective form of therapy that I've ever experienced with another human being. If I had one little PSA to give to anybody dealing with the subject of suicide in their own personal life, it's four letters. T-A-L-K. Just talk about it. Don't bottle it. Find someone to talk to. Talk to yourself if you have to. Talk to the ceiling. But the more you talk, the better it will get. And it seems so simple, but if you try it, you'll find that it's true.
Sean, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.